the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello, this is Athena Melville, your host for Education Now, welcoming you to our June 17th edition, and I am delighted to share my interview with Judy Barline as we focus on her life and Montessori public schools, with special emphasis on California. Judy Barline was first introduced to Montessori education 50 years ago when she heard American Montessori Society founder Nancy McCormick Rambush speak at her college. Judy was captivated and decided on the spot that if she ever had children, they would attend a Montessori school. A few years later, Judy's formal involvement with Montessori education began when she served on the board of directors of her children's school. For 44 plus years, as a parent, teacher, and teacher educator, Judy Barline has been an extraordinary Montessorian. Originally a high school teacher, she decided to enter Montessori education after being at home with her young children. She completed a Montessori teacher education program and began teaching 3 to 6 year olds at Glendale Montessori School in Southern California. In 1975, she applied to teach in a new public Montessori school opening near San Francisco. She remembers being notified on a Friday that she had been hired to start teaching a first and second grade class in San Mateo the following Tuesday. Judy calls this time in her life education by fire. She was teaching 6 to 9 year olds, but had no formal preparation for that level. She visited every private elementary Montessori class she could find, attending workshops presented by Ursula Thrush, and ultimately completed both 6 to 9 and 9 to 12 teacher education programs. In 1980, she opened a second public Montessori program in Lagunitas, California. This past March, Judy gave the keynote address at the annual American Montessori Society Conference in Boston, Massachusetts, where she was honored as their 2010 Living Legacy. A Montessorian with a buoyant spirit and a passion for peace, Judy represents the finest attributes of an effective teacher educator, having mentored countless Montessorians throughout the years. So we'll get started with this delightful interview with Judy Barline. And remember, you can connect with us during the broadcast and anytime through my email at hermes@pacific.net or by commenting on our Facebook page. Hello, Judy Barline, and welcome to Education Now.
Hello, Athena, and thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Judy, I have told our listeners a bit about you, but I would like to hear it in your own words. Can you tell us what first drew you to Montessori education?
Well, it goes back like 50 years ago. I was attending a college in Los Angeles, Mount St. Mary's College, and actually one of the sisters at this college had heard about Montessori, and so she asked a gentleman, Tom Laughlin, to come and talk about Montessori. So that was the beginning of the introduction. But then Nancy McCormick Rambush, who really founded the AMS came to the college to speak. And I can still remember sitting in that the auditorium listening to her, and something stirred in me. And I went, this is the most sensible approach towards education I've ever heard. And I made a vow right then and there, if I have children, they are going to attend a Montessori school. And I did have children, and all three of them did attend Montessori. At that time, though, I was teaching at a Catholic girls' high school in Woodland Hills, and so I was only involved in Montessori through my children. But that was my first introduction. Do you want me to go on from there?
Well, so you have three children.
Yes.
And boys, and girls?
I have two boys and one girl.
Two boys and one girl.
Matthew and Mary Kathleen.
I missed the names of the first two children.
It was Vincent,
Matthew,
and Mary Kathleen.
And Mary Kathleen. And they all attended Montessori school.
Yes. They attended, Vincent and Mary Kathleen attended just the Montessori 3-6 program. Matthew attended the 3-6 and the elementary, some of the elementary Montessori. Because at the time when they were young, the elementary program in Montessori was just really getting started in the United States.
Yes. Yes. And so now you have been participating for 44 plus years.
Yes.
As a parent.
44 is my favorite number.
44 is your favorite number?
Yes, I stopped counting after that.
So you've been involved all these years as a parent and a teacher and a teacher educator. And
yes.
When did you actually start the Montessori part of that teaching?
That's a very interesting story too, because I had been teaching for 10 years in a high school, and then with my third child, I said, I think I'm just going to stay home with Matthew, was the third child. And when I decided that, when I made that decision, two Montessori teachers who had taught my other children said, well, as long as you're home, why don't you take care of our babies too? So I ended up actually with four 13-month-olds at my house and loved it. They helped me, the Montessori teachers helped me set up this environment. And then situation happened in my life that I needed to change careers. And I thought, so what would I like to do? I thought, I love Montessori. So that's when I decided in 1972 to take the Montessori training. So I came up to Belmont, California. The College of Notre Dame had Montessori training. And so I took the 3-6 training and then started teaching in Glendale, California, and loved it. I loved working with that age group. It was something fresh and new and wonderful every day. And then another situation happened where I felt I needed to, number one, make some more money and leave the area. And so a phone call came in, one of those synchronicity kinds of things. And they said, the phone call said, we're trying to start a public Montessori program. This was in 1975, and this had not happened in the United States. And this was up in San Mateo, California, and I was invited to come and apply for this job. And I was given the job on a Friday, and school began on Tuesday, so I had a lot of a fast setup to do. But that was my entrance into the elementary Montessori and the public Montessori. About the same time, another public Montessori school was being started in Cincinnati, but we were right on the cutting edge of getting the public Montessori started in the United States.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear you talk more about public Montessori and to talk with you about that. But first of all, I want to be sure that our listeners know that this year, Judy spoke at the AMS annual conference in Boston, and she was a speaker for the Legacy Program. Could you talk a little bit about what the Legacy Program is? And it was such an honor for you to be a keynote speaker at the annual conference in Boston this past March, Judy.
Thank you, Athena. Well, quite a few years ago, there was this movement in the American Montessori Society to begin to honor people who had done some outstanding work for the Montessori Society and for the Montessori world. And so they established what is called a living legacy. And different people would be nominated, and then a person would be asked to be the living legacy representative for that year.
So you were the living legacy representative for this year.
For 2010. And it also coincided with the 50th anniversary of the American Montessori Society, the founding of the American Montessori Society. But it wasn't... So what the way it worked is that I was asked to represent all of the teacher educators, because, as we know, it is the teacher educators that have been absolutely the basis and the backbone of the Montessori movement in the United States. So I was I felt so honored and humbled to be able to represent all of these outstanding teacher educators. And in the name of the legacies, people are asked to donate money for scholarships so that aspiring teachers who would like to be a Montessori educator can have money to attend the teacher education programs, because that involves, to become a Montessori certified teacher, It's quite an extensive postgraduate program, and that's really the thrust. That's how the Living Legacy, financial aspect of the Living Legacy, began. So it's both an honor, and it's also a way to help support the Montessori movement by giving scholarships.
It sounds wonderful, and I'm so glad that they honored you, Judy. I know that I really valued my Montessori training. I did my training with Joy Turner. I don't know if you knew Joy.
Did I know Joy? I also taught in that training program, Athena.
Oh!
I taught in the 6-9 training program, and Joy Turner is one of my mentors. Absolutely. I remember so well at the time of Joy's death wanting to send that poem. It's a poem by Stephen Spender, and it's called "I Think Continually of Those Who Are Truly Great and Who Carry the Fire with Them." And I think of Joy in that way. Joy contributed so much to the Montessori movement, and of course was one of our living legacies.
Yes, she did. I'm suppose the reason I didn't run into you is because I did the younger group. I did the 3-6.
Yes.
And you were helping with the 6-9?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And then later, two of my sons, I have four, did their Montessori training, and they were fortunate enough to have Joy before she died. And
oh,
so,
how
oh yes, really, it is marvelous. So that's wonderful to know. And she would talk a lot about when Montessori was here in California, and I used to love those stories.
Yes, when she would give at the San Francisco World Fair, she had an exhibit, a class that people could watch from the sideline. And yes, oh, Montessori was quite an outspoken person about education,
right.
And let us know how she felt.
Yes, she was. But Joy told me that once she said to a group of mothers who were, because what Joy told me was that a lot of the people who were training with her were mothers who wanted mm-hmm. to school their own children. And that at one point Montessori said, "Let's put on lipstick and go to Catalina." And I thought, "Oh, how wonderful to know that she wasn't."
Somehow or another, I missed that story.
That she wasn't a stick in the mud. That just
no, she was not.
Not
no, she had, and I love reading memories from her grandson, who wrote about her and about the wonderful little things she would do and the way she would always have cookies for him in the bedstand. It makes her seem very, very human because the woman truly is larger than life.
Oh, yes, she is. She is. And well-deserved. And I think that still today we are finding out how incredible her intuition was about children and their lives and the way that
absolutely
they grow.
You know, what's interesting is as we hear more and more and more brain research being done, how much what the brain research people, what the scientists are saying and understanding are things that Montessori absolutely knew. Dr. Montessori had that entire sense of the importance of a prepared environment, for example, and the importance of keeping things in an orderly way for the very young child. And then the brain researchers are saying, yes, there's that part of the brain that if you go into a situation that is always changing, especially for a young child, that fear enters in. I mean, it's as though she had all of that sense of what really the not only the very intellectual academic part, but the deep spiritual emotional part that goes on within a human being. It's amazing to me because after all these years of being involved in Montessori education and working with people who wish to become Montessori teachers and working with the students, I just fall more deeply committed to her approach towards education and towards life, really.
Yes, yes. I so agree. One of my sons is a neuroscientist, and you know, it's exciting for him because he was a Montessori child to find these things. And I've had guests on Education Now in neuroscience who corroborate exactly what you're saying, Judy. Exactly what you're saying. It's very exciting. She was just quite an amazing woman, and to think that she grasped all of that from good scientific observation,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
Is pretty amazing. Well,
that is her basis of observation,
right.
And helping us learn how. I didn't want to interrupt you. I think you're.
I was just going to ask you if we could move on now to the Montessori public schools in Northern California. Now, the first school was in Northern California?
It was in San Mateo, yes. At the time, the name of the school is Meadow Heights. But we were the very first beginnings in 1975. It was one class of 6 and 7 year olds. And we were one class within the public school. So I had the Montessori class, which was, we just had, it was quite fascinating to see because, of course, attention was being paid to this beginning Montessori program that was started in San Mateo, and to then work closely with the other staff members trying to explain this system that was being used. And then, of course, I was learning from them and all of their wonderful educational practices, too, but I found myself really needing to be a spokesperson for what the philosophy was and why we would do certain things that we did. But that first year, I think that we had 25 wonderful students, And they, you know, some of them had been into a Montessori 3-6 classroom. Others hadn't. It was this wide variety of students, of course, as you have in any class. But remember, I was hired on a Friday, and I had to move up from Southern California to Northern California and start school on Tuesday. So, you know, it was a whole thing of getting environment prepared, getting materials. Luckily, Neenhaus had an outlet in Mountain View, so I could go and get some of the materials.
Yes.
But it was truly, when I think of it, the students would open the boxes with me, and we would all become so excited as we would see what this material was and what that material was. So we truly created together, those wonderful students and I, the environment and learned together. Another interesting thing is that I had not taken the 6-9 training. And so I was working with this age group with the 3-6 training, but boy, I learned quickly that that's a whole different developmental stage, plane of development that we're talking about. But luckily, in San Francisco, there's a woman named Ursula Thrush who... powerful, wonderful Montessori educator and an advocate for peace education. That, of course, is one of Montessori's main visions.
Yes, the Peace Rose.
Absolutely.
Ursula Thrush and the Peace Rose.
And the Peace Rose and the whole peace movement.
Yes.
And I was so fortunate because she started giving seminars. And I began to attend her seminars, and she would give them for people teaching 6-9. So through Ursula, I began to see that Montessori was not only the most sensible approach towards education, but I began to see that whole deep spiritual cosmic aspect of it, and began to see that how the curriculum, especially in the 6-12 and the adolescent program, how that entire curriculum really helps the individual become a person of peace and a person who can see the whole picture as they're doing the curriculum work. So my whole thrust began to grow and deepen and change. And then I finally did take the 6-12 training in Columbus, Ohio. But that first year was just an incredible experience.
Yes, and you call it a trial by fire. Are those your words?
I did, indeed, a trial by fire. And then, but word began to spread, and so it began to be not a lobby situation, but there was the first come, first serve to sign up. And so people, I remember in those first years, people would be lined up for sometimes two days and nights before to sign up for the program. And gradually there were three different teachers, and so the program gradually grew until maybe 15 years ago we were given an entire school at which is now North Shoreview Montessori. So the entire school is a dedicated Montessori school.
So what is it called again?
It's North Shoreview Montessori.
North Shoreview Montessori.
In San Mateo.
In San Mateo. And it is a totally Montessori school now.
Yes. And just recently, last year, they expanded into middle school. So we now go through eighth grade. One of the parents actually got the parents have been trying to stand the program for a long time, and a couple of years ago, Alyssa Moore, who's a board member and a dynamic parent, really got things going. So we now go through middle school, and but you know, throughout the country. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact number. I'd say there's about 300 public Montessori and charter schools. many charters, many Montessori programs are now charter schools.
Yes, both of my sons teach at a Montessori charter school, Tree of Life Montessori Charter School here in Ukiah. I'm just thrilled, you know, that it exists, because of course I had a private Montessori school, and in Willits, California, which is still here in Mendocino County, for 30 years, and it was K through 12. So we had graduates, and our graduates then would Joy invited them to present at a Montessori conference in Santa Monica, and how to bring arts into the classroom at that time. And then I had helped her with a conference that we had in Southern California in 81 when Bruno Bettelheim was there, and the whole subject of kids playing war, you know, with guns, toy guns came up. And, those thousands of people, they just split into two groups, Judy, you know, just, you know, because Bettelheim was saying, we live this out, the whole course of human history, and so they act it out. And there were other groups saying, no, 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 no. And so it was dynamic. That was dynamic. And of course, myself, I agree with Bettelheim, and that, you know, that this is the way to, we don't repress, is to give it expression. But there are many Montessorians who would disagree with me. I don't know how you feel about that, Judy, or how Ursula would feel about it.
I am amazed I missed that particular convention, because I would love to have been there. I do feel I would have been on the side of not, I don't want to use the word repression. I want to use a different way of, I feel there's so much violence that it's overkill, that's kind of a weird expression to use for this, but I don't think that that children need to be exposed to so much on television and on video games, and there has to be a healthier way to look at a way of acting out things. I mean, Bettelheim's, a lot of his was through fairy tales, but then maybe through the fairy tale begin to talk about what is going on here, what happened, and to hit some of those primal fears. But I have such a hard time with seeing these young children being given all kinds of guns and camouflage and clothing, and it's almost as though they're being encouraged through the media to think this is such a way to be. I think there are other ways to express
This would be a great thing. This would be a great topic of conversation.
It really would. And I'm sorry that that's interesting that it came up in 1981. I wonder
in 81. I don't know. It was in Anaheim. And oh, yeah, I love his work, too. And, of course, he didn't get a lot of criticism until after he died, which really annoys me that the people who don't agree with you can't confront you at the time that you are on this earth so that you can talk about it. I'm not saying that I agree with children watching violence. But the acting, the drama, there's the fairy tales, and then there's the acting out the fairy tales in drama, and giving it some dramatic expression and talking about the issues. One of my sons did some research on this for a speech he gave on today's youth, Why the Violence? And from his research, what he discovered was that it was the children who were well connected to their families, where there was discussion, and expression. That those children then were not violent towards the environment or towards each other. It was, from the research that he did, it was the repression. It was the repression that creates it. It's a kind of bottling up. But I can see that there won't be a new world if we don't have some new perspectives. And so I still think it's an open conversation.
It is, and I want to now build on what your son said and what you expressed. I agree. The discussion has to happen. It has to be, let's say that you do see something on television that is a bit violent. The parent, I think, needs to be right there with the child and talking about it, or letting them, like you said, act it out. It almost goes back to the Greek idea of the catharsis.
Yes.
That we can recognize that, yes, there are these tendencies, and then we can work it out in a healthy way, in a way that's not going to harm anybody or the environment. And what I found, going back to the environment too, because there is such an emphasis on the study of botany and zoology in the Montessori classroom, is the way that the students, through the appreciation of the work of the trees, the work of plants, the work of botany, and how we're all connected.
Yes.
That there's a genuine respect rather than, oh, just take care of trees, because they realize this incredible, what Montessori calls the cosmic task of everything, and how we're all connected, that sense of care and environmental concern is a deeply understood and felt part of their of each individual's life, who can move through it that way rather than being said, thou must do this, thou must do that. It's
yes.
A whole different approach towards why is it that we take care of trees or we respect trees or other people. So, yeah, but I would like very much to, like you said, to continue this discussion, because there are such healthy ways to handle things rather than, I mean, the very word repression just goes, that's, people are going to eventually have to break away from repression.
Yes, they are. And just what you said, you know, watching something with the child, not using television or the computer and games as a babysitter. You know, I mean, if the child was going to a play, you would go with the child. And then you would discuss it afterwards. Well, television is the same thing. It's not something, you know, that they should, well, shoulds and shouldn'ts, but should be used as a way, a diversion. It's powerful, and it needs some conversation.
Absolutely.
Well, to get back to public Montessori schools, so
yes.
This school in San Mateo is now going through eighth grade, and it's a
yes.
public Montessori school. And then you said you started another one in Lagunitas?
Yes, out in the San Geronimo Valley, and that school, it's an interesting. It's a very small rural community out in West Marin.
Uh huh.
And at the school, there were three different programs. There was what was called the A&E, more academic and enrichment. Then there was an open classroom, and Montessori. And that open classroom, I think, was one of the few still very strong remaining open classrooms, in, at least in the area that I knew of. And so the three programs coexisted beautifully. Now things have changed. I was there for about 10 years, but I think I left the Montessori program still going. But yes, I started that. And the thing, I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the other work I did with the teacher education of teachers in public schools, because what happened is there was a time when there was some really excellent funding for integration programs. And so entire schools in districts were training a staff. So, for example, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and in Delray, Florida, I'm going to use these two schools as examples. These are public school districts, and they wanted to be part of that federal desegregation program. So they each took a school in an area that would be an underserved area and then opened the training. This also happened in San Diego. Actually, it's happened many places, but the two that I'm most connected with, I'm going to talk a little bit about. And they opened the training to already certified teachers who were teaching in the district, and then they could choose to take the Montessori training. And so different Montessori programs went in and trained the staff, the people who wanted to take the training. And that was an incredible experience, because now we have people who have been in the public schools for quite a while now taking the Montessori training and beginning to implement it in their schools. And the success stories, and it needed to be, because it was in an underserved area, that the people could choose to be there, but it was definitely a balanced, a racially balanced program, as it is now also in San Mateo. The success rates have been just phenomenal. In fact, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, they've become one of the first public accredited AMS schools. They've had to go through that very intense accreditation process. But recently, I have been reading about and hearing about the school district in Fort Wayne is saying, you know, this program, this Montessori program, is so successful, they want to start implementing it in other places, at other schools. But it's been exciting to see how this has, the Montessori in the public school, especially in underserved area, has been so successful. I mean, yes, there's, you know, of course there are issues. There's issues with funding and everything else in all schools. But I think that when I talk about or think about the public Montessori, how impactful, how good it's been for many of the, I think it would be good for any population, but, you know, so I feel real positive about
it. That is very exciting, and that's recent, yeah. Right? You're talking about current history.
Yes, yes. Now that the Fort Wayne, guys, I would say then maybe they started 15 years ago, but currently I just was reading about and hearing about how, you know, the positive results, and I don't even really want to get off onto testing, but if some people think that testing is the end all be all, and I do believe in assessment, but that obsession with testing really does bother me. But
it's just about destroyed, in my opinion.
It
has destroyed education. But
again, I'm just, I keep hearing about how beautifully these students are testing, you know, how well they're doing on their testing. Not that that's, you know, it's almost like I hate to say it because I just so strongly disagree with the obsession.
Because people think that when you say, gee, these kids perform so well on the test, they think that's what you're preparing them for, instead of saying, we weren't even focused on that.
And they weren't. And they aren't.
Yeah, and they aren't.
You know, it's important to maybe, you know, just the practical life exercise of this is how you take a test. But to focus on that the whole curriculum begins to center around the test is really tragic.
It is tragic. And I think things are taking a turn now, Judy. I think things are taking a turn. I know I asked the question many times, why don't people go look at these model schools? and see, you know, that are so successful. I know that the Palo Alto public school system is very successful. Of course, when Proposition 13 happened and all those funds were cut, they didn't go along with it, which has a lot to do with why they're so successful. But so why don't, you know, instead of just, you know, throwing everything away, go look at Betsy Coe's school. It's a
Absolutely.
Private school, but wow, what a school. And get your ideas there. I had a gentleman on Education Now from, I was telling Marcy and Marie about this, when I had them on, from, the new science lab day, and he was saying, well, what we've discovered is that if you let these kids choose what they want to do and it's hands-on and experiential, why, they just really do well on the tests as well. And I was like,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and he was, you know, like, well, Montessori teachers and a good many other teachers have known this for a long time. But in the public system, their hands have just been tied. I mean,
absolutely. And I feel so really badly for them. I feel for the principal, for everyone. It's like you have to do this, or you may become one of those program improvement schools.
Right.
It is amazing
to
think that the idea of getting a student excited about learning is going to. I mean, that's pretty important. Let them do the things they want to do. I still love that, the Google guys. I'm sure you know that they are Montessori people.
Yes.
And how they said, and I read another article about it, how even in their work that they give on Friday, I understand that they let the people work on a projects they're really interested in,
right,
and the kind of exciting things that have happened.
Oh yes, I've heard criticism of them because people have too much fun if they work for them. And I thought, but the education should be fun. Life should be fun. What's this problem people have with fun? I mean, how pathetic. Oh.
You know, one of Nancy McCormick Rambush's books, the title of her book was Learning How to Learn. And I have this great story. When I was teaching...
I've read that book. It's a great book.
It's a marvelous. But when I was teaching in Lagunitas, I was teaching students. I had them from six-year-olds through fifth grade, so 10, 11. And, of course, you know, I'm part of a public school, so I need to teach history, right? So California history. Well, I taught it, of course, in my own Montessori approach with his timelines and projects and, you know, individual research. But I didn't do a lot with just the quote, California history textbook. I did really nothing with the textbook.
Great.
But then they were right, the middle school was right there in the same building. So now they went to a regular middle school. And so after these students, I had them for 5 years. I went up to some of them who are now in middle school, and I said, you know what? I really didn't do much with California history and some of the things that the other students would have had. I said, has it been a problem for you? And they put this one gal, especially Emily, put her hands on her hips, and she said, if we need information, we know how to get it, don't we? We can take care of ourselves. And I thought, oh, thank you. What a perfect, perfect comment.
Yes,
that's what we're trying to show them, that you are an independent learner, an independent scholar. You can get this information if you need information. So.
Yes. Yes, isn't it wonderful that she could say that? And isn't it wonderful that the Google guys could say, well, we really credit Montessori for our, you know, for a lot of our success. And
the two things that I remember them saying is that they learned to think outside of the box, mm-hmm. and they learned how important it is to do projects and with with another person. You get to work with somebody else.
Right.
Cooperative learning.
Cooperative learning and seeing that everything is connected, interdisciplinary. You know, I mean, of course, I mean, when you think of the internet, you know, that's how it works. And that's quite beautiful. Now, of course, I tell my sons that I think that Aristotle was on to all of this too, but but maybe that's just a prejudice that I have. I think this kind of learning from experience and hands-on and following, what you're interested in and how it leads to everything else. I don't think that it was so novel, but I think that Montessori was able to write it down and from her through her observations, and then because she was able to turn around these children who had been labeled as dysfunctional, then she got the attention, when really what it is that so many people are dysfunctional because of the system that they're having to deal with. And
yes, and talk about another kind of repression. I mean, that the system can repress any kind of wonderful creativity if we feel we have to just do this lockstep curriculum.
So many people are concerned and about the environment, and which you brought up, and I so agree with you, Judy, that Montessori was so aware of how this living system, and I just love all of her writing on water, and when I think of how if people just would read what she says about water, people would have been aware of how, you know, of the way that it all works in the system, instead of just seeing their little watershed when they're looking at something. And so she was just a visionary, and I'm so glad that you are carrying on her traditions, and as well as your own. I'm sure that it had to resonate with a part that's authentic in you, Judy, for you to...
Oh.
Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I was just going to say, absolutely. This is... It absolutely resonated with me. It hit something very primal when I began to especially understand and begin to see her idea of interconnectedness. And it's made my journey, my life, totally different than I think it would have been had I never really encountered Dr. Montessori and her beliefs and her visions and understandings. It's interesting what you said about water to National Geographic's last April issue of All About Water and the whole water concern. And a good friend of mine out in West Marin is working this just to show how the Montessori world pays such attention to this. She's working with her 3 to 6 year olds, a whole huge project on water and what these young children are beginning to say and think and realize because of some of the activities that they're involved with about water and how much fresh water there is that can be used, and that they see it through these very fascinating experiments that they're doing.
Yes.
But it's that attention that those of us who are so committed to what Dr. Montessori saw, or any true environmentalist, I mean, as you said, there are many, many visionaries who understand the interconnectedness, but how important it is to begin to show that at this very young, impressionable age, this power of interconnectedness and why we need to be concerned about water and why we need to not be the faucet running when we wash our hands and things like that. I mean, it's the implications are endless.
Yeah, it's an exciting time and it's a frightening time to be alive. And the oil spill, the depression that so many people are expressing to me, it's just phenomenal, and all of the wars. And all I can hope, Judy, is that it's reached a peak and that we're going to, it's going to go into an opposite direction. That's certainly my hope.
Well, and mine.
As we wind down, Judy, because time's just flying, unbelievably. Can you tell us what you're doing now? What are you doing right now in your life? Are you still teaching? Are you teaching teachers? Are you taking time for yourself? What are you doing?
I am continuing to teach teachers, and I'm involved in quite a few different teacher education programs, and I will continue to work here in the United States in teacher education programs, and also some international work. I spend as much time with my 5 grandchildren as possible.
How beautiful! 5 grandchildren.
And I think I spend the kind of free time I have. I love to walk, and I love to be out in nature. In fact, when people ask me how it is that I can keep staying positive, I said because I walk, and when I'm out with the trees and the birds and the animals and the beautiful clouds, it feeds me.
So
my work with aspiring teachers, I still, whenever possible, I will get into the classrooms just to be there with the energy of the students. I really miss teaching the students, the young students.
Yes, the kids. I love teaching. Right. The children.
So I will continue teaching. I continue enjoying my grandchildren and enjoying life.
Yeah, the children keep us young, don't they?
Oh,
and nature renews us daily. Yes, I so agree with you. And it's great to hear your wonderful voice, Judy. And I'm glad to have had this opportunity to talk with you today on Education Now.
Thank you. And I've enjoyed myself completely. Thank you.
Thank you for being my guest. Bye now.
You're most welcome. Bye now.
It was such a treat for me to have this time with Judy. Contact information for Judy Barline is Judy4Trees, that's J-U-D-I, 4, T-R-E-E-S, at sbcglobal.net. Judy4Trees at sbcglobal.net. The American Montessori Society continues to generously offer free current issues of their award-winning publication, Montessori Life. They will continue to do this through the month of June, and I thank them for that. To get your free copy of the current issue of Montessori Life, just send an email to Hermes@pacific.net with your contact information, or leave your request and contact information as a comment on the Education Now Facebook page. Of course, all comments and feedback are welcome using the same process. Send me an email at Hermes@pacific.net or visit us on our Facebook page and leave a comment there. On Thursday, July 1st, by popular demand, we will bring you the archived address by Judy Nelson on positive discipline, and I'm very much looking forward to it. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. An archive of all broadcasts can be heard with free download at the website. This is Athena Melville, and I am sending cosmic love to you all, along with my wish for peace. Bye now.
Are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.